thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Bonjour.
Here's John Williams.
C'est moi. It's John. I was at the Blackhawks game last night. The woman two seats down was speaking French. I threw some French at her. She looked at me and in perfect English said, "You're doing it wrong." Hi, we're in the Allstate Skyline Studios speaking of France.
You haven't met him yet, you haven't had the chance, cause he's been kicking ass as the ambassador to France. But someone's gotta keep the American promise. You simply must meet Thomas. Thomas.
Nothing could depress me more than to think that you all lust to see this musical. Because Hamilton despised you.
Oh, boy.
Hamilton did not believe in democracy. He said the people are a beast, a rabble, entirely incapable of self-government. He said they must be governed by the wise, the rich, and the well-born. He wanted the Constitution changed into a hereditary monarchy. And this is you who pay $900 to see this. You should be ashamed of yourselves. No, if you love liberty, you should be ashamed to celebrate that man.
You should see the guy that plays you on stage. It's something to see.
So what did I miss?
Yeah. Well, that was a conversation we had with Thomas Jefferson on stage last year, maybe. Ever since Hamilton the musical's come out, it's fun to bring up that when Thomas Jefferson is in town, and he's in town once or twice a year. So our next Thomas Jefferson visit, it sounds like that. It's an unrehearsed, spontaneous live conversation. Is going to be May 18th at the Classic Cinemas Tivoli Theater at 10 a.m. Tickets are $33. The best way to get your tickets is online at WGNradio.com/Jefferson. They also do walk-up sales at the box office at the Tivoli. Depends on the show times, though. It's sponsored by the Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park and Oak Brook. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. But just go to WGNradio.com/Jefferson now. We're only doing one show on Saturday, May 18th, 10 a.m. at the Tivoli in Downers Grove. And I think it's going to be really good. I'm regretting already the theme that I picked for the show because it shows a sort of surly-looking Thomas Jefferson, and it's Jefferson, hey, America, Jefferson's ticked. When I brought that up to him, in a short interview we had with him here not that long ago, he said, I wouldn't say ticked. First of all, he says, we didn't say ticked. And secondly, I would say I'm disappointed. And the conversation is about America today. It's about America back then. It's whatever you want to ask him about. I talk to him on stage, you get to, too. It's really fun. It's very unique. I'm really proud of it. And I think you'll enjoy it, too. We sell them out. So, and I don't know how many tickets are left, to be honest with you. They've been on sale for a few days now. WGNradio.com/Jefferson to find out more. And, you know, the last couple times Jefferson comes to town, the elephant in the room, of course, was either the election was Hillary and Donald Trump or Donald Trump. And we talk a little bit about that, but really not at all. I don't recall specifically asking Jefferson a question about Trump, right? I don't think I mentioned his name. And I don't think many of the people did either, but so many things float around it, you know. Supreme Court judges and the power of Congress and a chief executive's power and the 25th Amendment and is impeaching too easy or too hard? And all of those things that kind of float around Trump these days came up. And then he talked about him, and the contrast is interesting. And to be honest with you, those of us who are Jefferson fans, I'm one of them, are challenged by the things that come out of his mouth. You know, he's not a fan of impeachment, and he's, I'll let him speak for himself on that. He's a gun owner. He was a slave owner, right? So you really do have to sort of compartmentalize the things he says. It's a very interesting listen, and again, you get to ask questions. By the way, I was going to mention this the other day, and just by way of schedule, let me just insert this before I do that, and that is at 1:30, Jefferson Graham, no relation, the USA Today tech columnist, joins us. When you're talking to your smart speaker, it's best if you know how to talk to it. And some are better than others at certain things. So he's going to run that down with us. In the 2 o'clock hour, Mary Wisniewski, the Tribune transportation writer, talks about all of the state troopers and police officers who are being hit by vehicles these days. First, this. The New York Times and the Washington Post, you probably heard, reported relentlessly on the Trump-Russia investigation. And for that, they have shared the 2018 Pulitzer Prize. Came out a week ago or so. That's not news. Nor is the fact that the president said that since their reporting was wrong or corrupt, that their prize should be rescinded. The president's son retweeted the president's comments on that with the following comment, quote, he's right, unless they give Pulitzers for fiction, hashtag fake news. In that post, Trump Jr. misspelled Pulitzers, incorrectly putting an apostrophe between the R and the S. Having read all of that, and wisely choosing not to jump into the Trump-Russia debate, the Tribune's Heidi Stevens simply retweeted Trump Jr.'s post with the following comment, quote, ugh, that apostrophe. The son, like the father, either doesn't know or doesn't care about errors when they communicate.
You get the idea. Why are you all hung up about grammar?
It reminds me only a little bit about the Chiron on Fox and Friends on Sunday, reporting that the president plans to cut aid to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. The TV show Fox and Friends on Sunday posted the headline under its three talking anchors, Trump cuts U.S. aid to three Mexican countries. Once again, someone doesn't know or care enough to find out.
Sometimes you can understand how a mistake can be made.
Yeah.
That's a hard one to figure out, like without them really thinking there were three Mexican countries.
Well, there's only one. They all speak Mexican. No, wait. Probably somebody thought that. Well, they all speak Mexican. They kind of look the same. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. If everyone who is an immigrant looks the same to you and you don't know that there's only one Mexico, then that headline is fine. The network fixed it and apologized. The same is not true for the president's son, by the way. And by the way, now that I think about it, Steve, I don't think he's going to be president someday, but since he's a candidate and he's been getting a lot of attention, we ought to know how to pronounce the name of the mayor of South Bend, Indiana.
Buttigieg.
Is that what you're going with?
Buttigieg, I think, yeah. Are you talking about his first name, Peter?
I say the mayor of South Bend.
Yeah, Mayor Pete, they call him.
Producer Aleph, how do you pronounce his name, please?
According to Chasten Buttigieg, here are possible pronunciations. Okay. Buttigieg, Buttigieg. Buttigieg, Buttigieg, John.
Okay, so at least they're all soft G's. It's J and J, Buttigieg, Buttigieg, Buttigieg. Here's Steve Bertrand. Don't think about it now, just say it. What is the mayor of South Bend's name? Go.
Buttigieg.
Buttigieg.
I mean, it took me a while, but...
Yeah.
But it is Pete, right, Pete?
Those are just sounds. We don't make that often here in the Midwest. What? It doesn't even look right. It looks like a typo. Buttigieg, whatever. So that's his name. Today is Equal Pay Day. They say that a woman would have to work all of last year and up to today in order to be paid as much money as a man did last year. So happy Equal Pay Day in Chicago. Happy Election Day, too. Not just in Chicago, but some of the suburbs are having runoffs. And I have a question for you. At 312-981-7200, you're a man or a woman. You work wherever. Is there a pay equity issue where you work? And how do you know? I follow somebody on Twitter who asked me not to mention her name or her story. I will mention a little of it. She tweeted it, and it's still there. And she posted a long thread about it, for that matter. But if she doesn't want me to give her name, that's okay. But she said, here's how much money I make. And people who are just as qualified or less qualified are making more. And then here's all of the excuses I get from my employer. And it was very specific. It was her name, her employer, how much money she specifically earns. It's not a ton of money. And then here's maybe at 25% more how much somebody else makes. And she's upset about it. And she's putting it all out there. I sort of applaud the courage of her convictions, because if you don't feel you're being paid enough, maybe you're vulnerable to begin with. I don't know how well that plays with your employer. Not that they should fire you or demote you or pay you less because you've called them out, but it's just a funny attack. I don't know that that's the wisest way to go about it, but that's sort of beside the point. But she put it out there and just said, this is terrible at our company, her whole company. She said, forget about it. LOL, if you want pay equity at this company. And I'm wondering what it's like where you are, and how do you know? Because in the back of my mind, and listen, I'm not denying her case or anybody's case. I think we all know it happens. But this also happens in the back of people's minds. They say, well, maybe that other person is better at the job or more qualified. Or maybe some of these historic averages don't take into account the fact that women historically haven't stayed in some positions as long as men, and therefore they haven't risen on the pay scale like men have. None of that would, I think, explain or excuse or in any way justify pay inequity today. If you're hired today with the same qualifications, good Lord, this should have happened 1,000 years ago, and it should happen today. So I wonder, has the workplace where you are at least caught up with that two people walking in the door, male and female, today will both get the same pay? And how do you know? Because I think that's a very sensitive subject, talking about your pay and benefits with colleagues. I think that's perilous. How would you know? And is it an issue where you work? I'm just interested in your thoughts on this topic. 312-981-7200. Lee, it's John. You're on WGN. Thanks for calling in. What can I do for you?
Hi, John. I just wanted to mention that I've been a manager in a hospital for a number of years, seen a lot of managers come and go, and have spoken with some of the managers, especially the female managers, about starting pay, not specifically what they make, but just their negotiating. And it seems that the ones that I have talked to, a lot of the women seem to be a little timid when it comes to asking for more money when they start than the males. The males that, that I've dealt with seem to do a little bit better at negotiating a starting rate. And I think that's part of the problem, that some of the women that I've worked with seem to just be happy that they're getting a promotion to a manager, and they're not as concerned with the money part.
That's an interesting point. And I suppose as the person controlling the purse, it's not your job to say, you know, you could get more if you just play harder or smarter at this. So if they say, I'll work for $51,000, when the young man that came in said, I want $59,000, therein lies some pay difference. But is it inequity? I don't know what your responsibility as a supervisor in that situation is, you know?
Well, the last, I can tell you, the last person that applied for a manager with a similar position as mine, she was just accepting of whatever they were going to give her.
Right.
And I told her that this was the one opportunity that she had to really negotiate a price, since she's starting in a new position. But she just seemed happy with what she got.
I really appreciate your call. Thanks for jumping in.
You're welcome, John.
Have a good day, Lee. Hey, John, it says here, a few of you are saying things like this. Tell John I'll be calling him when Mayor Pete's elected president someday. Remember, Trump got the gig. Wow, did he just blow Pete off? I didn't mean to blow Pete off. I said I don't think he's going to be president someday, just because I think being the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and not a household name, he's working at it, but so too are a lot of other people. I just think that's such an uphill battle.
So you mean we're Notre Dame is, so you hate Catholics?
Thanks for the help, Steve. But here's what Dean Richards and his caller. So Dean says, tell me about Mayor Pete. And people were calling and loving him. I mean, usually people at a local level have a lot of complaints, and they're the first to call and complain. I didn't hear one of them. So he's a Rhodes Scholar. He served in Afghanistan. He's, you know, a mayor. He's, what were some of his other just really interesting? Oh, he speaks, tell me if this is true, 7 languages. I didn't know that. There was just like one eye-popping credential after another that you go, oh, you, the military background's good, super smart's good, multilingual, multicultural that way, very good. What do you not want?
He's eloquent. You know, he can. He presents his positions very clearly.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he talked about his differences with Mike Pence, I thought very forcefully.
I wonder how he would play his orientation in his family life.
Well, he's not strident either. It was the second thing I was going to say. You know, he was asked about Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is largely seen as an anti-gay corporation.
Yeah, he had a great response about that.
He said, I don't agree with what they stand for, but I kind of like the chicken.
Yeah, and everybody praised him for that. They said, they are good sandwiches. You got to admit.
Damn it, finally someone said it.
So, listen, I'll be happy to be wrong about that, but since there's 132 candidates, I'll be right about 131 of them when I say he probably won't be president, and I just think it's... And golly, can you imagine what a debate between him and Trump would be like? I've thought about this. It's a big thought, and I've had it, and here it is for you. Whoever the Democratic candidate is, I would not schedule more than 3 debates with Donald Trump. Maybe I would do 2. I don't know that that kind of theater is all that helpful. And from a strategic standpoint, I think it benefits the president anyway, the incumbent. So I'm not exactly sure I would do a lot of them. John Williams, you want to guess, Steve? The news click yesterday, 5 years ago, Joe Biden kissed a candidate in Nevada on the head. Still can't believe that's yesterday's news click.
That was a Katy Perry song, wasn't it?
You got 3 options here. A, give Joe a pass, not a big deal. B, give Joe a pass, but this is a really big deal.
I don't think pass is the right word, but go ahead.
C, let's not give Joe a pass. You want to take a gander at how that broke down?
I'm going to say 62% said give Joe a pass.
70% said, you're close, give Joe a pass, it's not a big deal. 11% said, give him a pass, but this is a big deal. And 19% said, let's not give Joe a pass. Put another way, 30% of you said, this really matters. 70% of you said, no, it doesn't, stop. And, predictably now, only because behaviors tend not to be unique, right? If you do once or twice, maybe you've done it 3 or 4 times. Other women are coming forward now. At least another one has and said, yeah, I was kind of geeked out by his behavior too. I sure hope this doesn't become the thread or one of the main threads of his candidacy if he decides to run. Last couple of texts about pay equity. John, my sister was reviewing resumes for an open position that she was hiring for, and came across a list containing all of the salaries of all of her peers mixed in. She was earning at least $20,000 less than anyone else. They were all men. Today is pay equity day. 262, John, how do you factor in tenure at an employer? If I've been there 15 years and the next person that comes in has been there 3 days, why can't there be pay disparity? I think that's apples and oranges in this case. 269, John, living next door to South Bend, we in Southwest Michigan have been watching Mayor Pete for several years now. He's one amazing guy. We love him and his husband, Chasten, and their 2 dogs.
It's funny, isn't it, that I think now that's the one, we can vote for anyone in any relation or any, you know, race, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
I think it's harder for a married gay man to win than it would be just for a gay man to win.
Yeah, right.
I think that's a big step still for a lot of people.
Boy, you talk about breaking down barriers of a female president or a black president, whatever, you know, we have done or are trying to do these days. You know, whatever the electorate wants, right? But this would be one of the biggest last hurdles. Gay married man.
It would complete one of the biggest whiplashes in American societal history, really. The quickness with which we embraced or endorsed or allowed gay
marriage. Well, think about that. It wasn't even legal 5 years ago.
Right, that's what I mean.
Most of the country. 312, Mayor Pete is Maltese from the small island of Malta. This is why so many people can't understand his name. Not many of us out there, said evidently a Maltese listener.
It's a Maltana, I think.
Three more. 630. He just officiated a wedding before... let me start that again. 630 tweeted, he just officiated a wedding yesterday before the wife gave birth, before putting out a fire, and then he saved a cat from a tree. Okay. 847 said, I've said it before, I'll say it again. They should not have audiences for the debates. 630 says, who cares about orientation? No one. Isn't that great? You can talk amongst yourselves on that one.
I was going to say, it's more and more true. I wish it was completely true.
And finally, 269, watch Mayor Pete in an interview. No hemming, no hawing. He's direct, quick, smart answers. He taught himself Norwegian to read a certain author's books. You can bet he can spell and punctuate correctly, too. And then he saved a cat from a tree. The Norwegian part, I believe, is accurate. I would just get the English translation myself.
What kind of animal control is he operating in South Bend if he's got to keep rescuing cats?
I still, you know, that's all great. I just, you know, I just don't know how any of that translates. Literally, this is a question for Thomas Jefferson. So what skills or attributes do you look for when you hire somebody to be president? And it has to be somebody that the people in Indiana and Missouri will like, and the people in New York and California will tolerate, and so on and so forth.
When he's asked about, you know, how can someone who's only governed 100,000 people govern the country, what his answer is that it's being a mayor, and being a mayor gives you that executive experience, whether it's a huge city or a medium-sized town.
Yeah.
I don't know that that translates or is...
I'll run that by Mitch McConnell.
Well, I mean, run it by a lot of people. I don't know about that. And, you know... He might not be mayor in 20 or president in 2020, but it doesn't mean he's not going to be president either.
Sure, absolutely. I wish him nothing but the best. I do not have a dog in this hunt. But didn't we just love Beto O'Rourke the other day? Weren't we trying to figure out how to say that guy's name? I just think he is the very shiniest of the objects out there right now, and I don't know that that necessarily means he'll be electable or that he would be a good president. I hope you don't hear that as my disparaging his candidacy. That's me just trying to figure out who this guy is and, you know, what would be best for the room
right,
when it happens.
You want Joe Biden, and then for the debate, they introduce him. He walks over to Melania Trump. He gives her a kiss.
Would you shut up?
And then goes to the podium and begins the debate.
Would you just stop? And by the way, when you consider, I mean, so, all right, thank you for starting me up on this. But when we consider the bizarre slash nearly intolerable behavior of the man who is president when he was a candidate at a debate, saying the kinds of things that he said to Megyn Kelly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I just think the bar has so moved down,
the bar's only that way on one side, and that's the problem that the Democrats have created for themselves. You know, I mean, they've become the zero tolerance party among themselves. And for good reason. Because
yeah, I was just going to say, some of that's not tolerable.
Well,
that's
right.
Why.
But if they want to make a case against Donald Trump, then they can't. You know, they can't excuse Al Franken. Al Franken probably could have survived that.
Oh, he could have today.
Yeah.
Al Franken was the first to jump off the ship, and he didn't have to.
But you understand why, right?
No, I don't. I didn't understand it then, and I still don't understand
Because
it.
You can't say Donald Trump is grabbing women by the crotch and then cover for your Minnesota Democratic senator. You have to throw them all out.
I think the danger in that is throwing them all together.
Well, I don't disagree, but I'm telling you That's where they are.
Jefferson Graham is the technology columnist for the USA Today today. We just found him. Hey, Jefferson, it's John Williams. How are you?
I'm here. Hi.
Good. I appreciate you joining us today. I had a question for you. I've been reading your stuff, and you had a piece the other day, What Music Should I Play? In the Battle of Google, Alexa, and Siri, Here's Who Answers the Best. I only recently got a smart speaker, so I'm kind of new to the game. Should I be asking my speaker to play a specific kind of music, or should I ask it to play the music that it has decided I already like?
Well, the first question is, what speaker did you buy?
Alexa.
Okay, yeah, you don't want to say that out loud too many times. It'll drive your listeners crazy.
I know.
Amazon is further ahead in music than the other two, and you can ask play me this song, play me this artist, play me this album, play me this playlist, play the radio, all those things, and they work really well. But there's some other questions that you can ask as well, like, play me music I like. And based on your listening history, they will actually play you songs that you like.
I've never
basically
tried
it,
really.
It's just, you know, it's a collection of songs by people that you've played before. But that's fine. What doesn't work is play me something I haven't listened to in a while. That's a question that should work, but I didn't like John Denver in the 70s, and I still don't like him today. I don't want to ever hear John Denver. So when I say play me something I haven't listened to in a while, that assumes that I once actually played him, and I didn't.
Yeah.
But you can, with Alexa, ask the question, what music should I listen to? And then Alexa will say, well, we understand, Jeff, that you like jazz and classical, so we have chosen for you. Would you like to listen to Django Reinhardt, James Taylor, or Adele? And you say, well, I'll take Django, please. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. I tried the other day, I just said play jazz. And that was, you know, obviously, I guess, way too broad a target, right? Play jazz.
It'll work after you've played a bunch of jazz, because then they'll figure out what kind of jazz you like.
I did not like what I was getting. I was getting, you know, honky-tonk.
If you say play jazz, you could be getting anywhere from Dixieland right. to hardcore fusion, and they have to understand what kind of jazz you like.
Would this work as a command? Say I like standards. I like Frank Sinatra. Play, so I'm imagining in my head a sort of Spotify-type Sinatra station. Can I just say play music that's kind of channels the whole Sinatra vibe? And what would I say?
Well, I mean, you could try play the Great American Songbook. I haven't tried that, but that's what I would say.
I mean, but it is. Have you noticed? I mean, is that part of the challenge of using smart speakers is knowing exactly what to say in order to get where you want to be?
Yeah. But again, if you like Sinatra, which I do, and I listened to Sinatra on the smart speaker last night, if you play some Sinatra songs and you play some Tony Bennett and some Diana Krall, et cetera, and then come back at them saying, play music I like, they'll play you that.
I got that. But if I said out of the blue, play Sinatra, would I only get Sinatra music, or would it sort of know that I don't want to hear an endless stream of Sinatra?
No, they would shuffle. They would give you Sinatra and Tony Bennett and Michael Bublé. Yeah.
So about these sources, the A word, the S word, and the A, is it Amazon or is Google? What are the three that we're talking about?
Google. A-G. A-G.
A-G and S. Is one of them better at this than the other?
Yeah, Amazon is better on music than the other two. Siri, believe it or not, would be number two. And Google is kind of dumb when it comes to specific music queries that aren't just play me this song, play me this album. When I did the one where I would throw out some lyrics to a song, play the song that goes, tell me something, girl. Now, that's how the song From a Star is Born, Shallow, begins. That's the opening line. Well, Siri and Alexa got it right immediately, and Google, I tried three times, it couldn't. It finally got it right on the fourth try.
That's funny, because Google is obviously the search engine the planet uses. You would think have the algorithm down better than anybody.
You would think. When I said, play a song I listened to last Friday, it played Friday Night TGIF.
Maybe that's its problem. It's too smart, you know. It knows everything, and now it doesn't know which, but the other ones,
yeah, you
know.
You could do a bunch of play me sad music, play me upbeat music, play me mellow music, play me happy music. Now, when you say play me happy music to Google, they play the song happy.
Yeah, right.
Where the other guys give you a mix that's, you know, upbeat, happy songs.
Yeah, no kidding. We're visiting with Jefferson Graham. He's the technology columnist for the USA Today, today. His piece the other day was, what music should I play in a battle of those three providers? Here's who answers best. It's a very helpful piece. And then there I saw a link to another article you wrote, and it was, okay, if we asked 100 questions generally, which of these services are best. And I think my question is sort of the same as well. When I want information, is there an art to how I craft it? Let's pick it up here in just a minute on WGN. We're visiting with Jefferson Graham. He writes about technology for the USA Today. His piece the other day about how best to talk to your smart speaker when trying to get the music you want was very helpful. Just give us maybe, Jefferson, any clues or tips you have about how best to talk to it when I'm looking for information.
Check out their web pages. Amazon has a web page with suggested commands. Go take a look at them, and once you figure out what some of the ones that work for you, you'll remember them and you'll use them often. So I would recommend that.
Do you have of the three that you were writing about, do you think one of them is better at understanding what people are asking for?
Google is generally smarter in most things except for music, and Amazon is investing more money in making, you know, that word that you don't want me to say, very smarter, and that's where the money is going. But Siri, which is maligned and is actually more used than the other two services, if you just manage your expectations and know that Siri can set an appointment, tell you what time it is, tell you what the weather is, give you directions, very simple things, Siri is actually pretty good. There's a lot of things it doesn't do well, but if you just manage your expectations and realize what it does do well, you'll like it better.
One last question. Are you amazed at the technology? I mean, we take it so for granted now, grumbling that it doesn't know what I'm saying. It's a little box you plugged into the wall, and it's telling you the temperature down the road or playing music. Isn't it amazing that we can just yell at that thing and it does this stuff?
And that it can hear us. You're sitting in the kitchen talking to your wife, and the word comes out of your mouth, and the next thing you know, it hears you. I'm always surprised about that.
I wonder if they shouldn't have a two-word start, right? Because that is a flaw in it. It's too easy to accidentally get that thing rolling.
Yeah, well, with Google, it is two words.
I did not know that. Well, let's not say them on
the radio. You have to say the word hey. Or
no,
okay.
Kidding. I did not know that. I'm that's not the system I have. This is all helpful, Jefferson. I've taken more of your time than I asked for. I'll call you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Jefferson Graham writes about technology for the USA Today, today.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
I think that was one.
Here's John Williams.
Doing it from the Billy Goat tonight. Good for them. That'll be entertaining. You would expect as much, but what a good idea. Plus the information, the result. The margin of the results, all coming your way tonight. We're on WGN Radio. It's John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio, weekdays 1 to 3.
You haven't met him yet, you haven't had the chance. Cause he's been kicking ass as the ambassador to France. But someone's gotta keep the American promise. You simply must meet Thomas, Thomas.
Nothing could depress me more than to think that you all lust to see this musical. Because Hamilton despised you.
Oh, boy.
Hamilton did not believe in democracy. He said the people are a beast, a rabble, entirely incapable of self-government. He said they must be governed by the wise, the rich, and the well-born. He wanted the Constitution changed into a hereditary monarchy. And this is you who pay $900 to see this. You should be ashamed of yourselves. No, if you love liberty, you should be ashamed to celebrate that man.
You should see the guy that plays you on stage. It's something to see.
So what did I miss?
It really is something to see. That's my friend Thomas Jefferson talking, obviously, about the musical Hamilton. He and I do a couple of live, unrehearsed conversations. We get up on stage and talk, him in uniform, me in mine, and we just have a conversation about life then and life now, and then you get to ask questions, too. It's a thing, I'll tell you. And you can get tickets at WGNRadio.com/Jefferson. WGNRadio.com/Jefferson. Show's going to be May 18th. That's a Saturday at 10 a.m. at the Tivoli Classic Cinemas Theater. That's in Downers Grove. It's sponsored, by the way, by our friends at the Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park and Oak Brook. Call 708-888-0000. Thanks to them for that, and thanks for TJ for coming on out. By the way, last text about the last conversation. John, when the Me Too movement first began, my original thoughts, this is evidently tied to the Joe Biden conversation. When the Me Too movement first began, my original thoughts were, guys know where the line is. But hearing the almost anxiety-filled conversations, I feel sad for the majority of men who have gotten lumped in with the creeps. 847 said, I don't think Biden issue is as bad as number 45 grabbing women. 773 says, I'm a hospice nurse, and I always ask if I could give either the patient or the family a hug before just doing it. 847, would a kiss on the cheek be okay? You all answer that amongst yourselves. 847, we gave a pass to grab her by the, give him a pass too. By the way, I'm a woman. 574, this is about Pete Buttigieg. South Bend resident here, really excited to hear you talking about Mayor Pete. We're a young family that stayed here because we saw the city growing because of him. Great leadership. John, you should have Pete on, and his husband, too, on your show. His husband is very funny on Twitter. Two more. Just one more. I would love a woman president, a gay president, whatever. Just would love a good president. I know it isn't our current one, but I'm still thanking heaven it's not Mrs. Clinton. That last part explains everything. Mary Wisniewski writes about transportation for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Hi, John. Good. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us. She's also an acclaimed author. We'll mention her book, Algren, A Life, at the end of this conversation, but I love giving it a plug because I haven't read the book yet. Now that I think about it, I should, but I've only heard wonderful things about it, and your interview with Rick Kogan was delightful.
Thank you, Will. I think you'd like it. It's a lot of Chicago history.
Well, that's a subject of great interest to me, of course, so it's on my list now. Mary, let's talk about your column in the Chicago Tribune the other day. Illinois troopers get tough on distracted driving. Chicago tickets plunge. I'm interested in that, but I've just also been very interested of late in the number of state troopers who have been getting hit by motorists.
Yes.
Sometimes they're drunk, sometimes they're distracted. And when the reporting came out the other day that we had, 14 and 15, over the weekend we had another one.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me how many people are getting hit. How many state troopers are getting hit when they pull vehicles over. In general, what's going on here?
I think that people are not giving the care to driving that they should give. I think that's something that we see out on the streets every day. When you're using your car as basically your living room, and you're texting, or you're eating, or you're brushing your teeth, or you're watching a video, which people do. People watch videos, they take videos, they take photographs. This is the kind of, there's this laxity of, is what I see on the roads toward what we're doing, which is driving something that's 2,000, 3,000 pounds and can kill people.
I'm not judging y'all because we all have sort of evolved as a species, as Mary says, that's how we're living our lives now. But boy, I've never lost so much attention that my car steers out of the lane. When there's another car or two parked right there, I mean, think about all the things that have to go wrong. You're going fast, you're veering out of your lane, and you don't even see that there's a car ahead of you? I mean, that's amazing to me.
When you look down for even a brief amount of time to look at a text or to look at something coming in, it's like a length of a football field goes by. You know, this is how serious this is. Some safety advocates I've talked to say that distracted driving is actually in some ways worse than drunk driving.
I totally believe that. I think a lot of us see drunk driving and text driving. We see text driving more. They act like drunk drivers, though, ahead of you. When you see somebody weaving or swaying, you go, that's not a drunk. That's a texter. They're always texters.
Of course, the problem with people drinking while they're driving is still a huge one. It's responsible for about a third of the crashes out there, and it's responsible for the last tragedy that we had with the state trooper, where they believed that the person was drunk and was driving on the wrong side of the road.
Well, do we know of this almost two dozen now that we've had, a dozen and a half in Illinois, what the breakdown was? Were they drunk? Were they texting? Were they just distracted by nothing? I mean, what was going on there?
most of them are going in the right direction. So I don't know the exact breakdown, but you know it's a good chance that some of them were not doing what they were supposed to be doing, which is paying attention to the road.
Here's what also troubles me. None of those troopers are at fault. And the next police officer in the city of Chicago that gets hit by a vehicle while they're doing their work out of theirs, it won't be that cop's fault either. But I see so many instances where the police, somebody runs a stop sign or a stoplight, or they're speeding and the cop pulls them over right there, you know, on the shoulder or in the lane of traffic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm amazed that that protocol exists. Why don't they tell them to pull over into a mall parking lot or a gas station or a side street where it's residential and they're not in peril? I'll finish this question, Mary. Two things bother me about this. One is I think the police officer puts himself in jeopardy, but also it creates a backup that is sometimes dangerous behind the officer, and they don't seem to appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I think it really depends on where you are, what kind of roadway you're on. I was exchanging emails with Sergeant Christopher Watson over at the Illinois State Police, and he had taught driver's ed for a while. And one of the things that they teach driver's ed students is to pick a safe location to be pulled over.
Wow, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, that's because the police cannot plan for every contingency when pulling over. They can try to activate their lights at a time where, you know, they're attempting to stop in some place that's a safe location, but they can't always plan for that. And so a lot of this actually goes down to the driver and the driver pulling over into a safe location.
I would get the feeling if I saw the lights on in my rearview mirror and I realized it was me, that if I continue to drive to a location that I thought was safe for both of us,
mm-hmm.
that would only agitate the police officer. I'm not cooperating.
You would think that it's an interesting question, because on one hand, you do want to pull over someplace safe, but on the other hand, you don't want to be seen as, you know, being Smokey and the Bandit and, you know, trying to, you know, initiate a police chase.
So what is the advice then in this scenario?
The advice for students is to try to pull over somewhere safe.
Yeah.
And for the police to try to pull over, you know, to not turn their lights on until they can pull over someplace safe. This has consequences in giving out tickets, because I did a story a few months back, John, about how most of the tickets on Lakeshore Drive, and there are a lot of them given for speeding on Lakeshore Drive, are given on the south side, and there's a simple reason for that. It's because there's no place to pull over on the north side. So the police are hesitant to pull people over on the north side of Lakeshore Drive, even though there's a lot of speeding up there, because there's no safe place to do it.
Lakeshore Drive, Brenda and I were on it twice this weekend. I'm on it twice some days, but it was amazing to me. We saw two bad crashes on Lakeshore Drive. I know there's a plan to even it out over by Oak Street, but that's gigantic. That's not going to happen in anybody's lifetime, I don't know.
Oh, I think it'll happen in a lifetime. It'll just take a while. They want to add more shoulder space. That's part of the plans that the IDOT and the city are talking about right now for redoing North Lakeshore Drive, is to add more place for shoulders so that they can pull people over, and also so people who are having car trouble can pull over. So there'll be, because right now there's almost no shoulder at all in parts of North Lakeshore Drive.
I guess it depends on the police officer, Mary Wisniewski, but you're telling me if I took another quarter mile until I found a small strip mall I could pull in to get my ticket from the officer, he'd appreciate that. I just wonder.
I think if you can do that in such a way that, you know, it doesn't look like you're initiating a police chase, I think that could be a good idea. Of course, sometimes you don't have that situation. Sometimes you're on a highway and there's all you can do is pull over in the shoulder. And in this situation, we have to have some more safe driving out there. We have to have people acknowledging that they have to clear the way for safety workers.
So, I'm sorry, what are you talking about now?
When you're driving on the road and you see someone pulled over, you know, you have to make sure not to hit them.
Oh, yeah, sure. I thought you were talking about, like, construction crews, which is a whole nother animal.
Right, yeah.
But the safety of the officers, I totally appreciate that. I'd be interested in hearing from a police officer at 312-981-7200. Producer Elif just whispered in my ear that some of the calls that are coming in are inexplicably dropping off. Hang in there. Try again. 312-981-7200. If you're an officer, or if you've done what I just described, you just keep going and you go and you kind of look up at him in the rear view mirror and say, I know, I'm going over there. How does that play out? I'd very much like to hear you next. Wow, are we getting a lot of texts about the topic that Mary Wisniewski and I are writing about? She's the transportation writer for the Chicago Tribune. Mary, can we just take a couple quick calls with you?
Yeah.
We'll start with Michael. Michael, you're on WGN Radio. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, John. How are you this afternoon?
Good. Thanks for calling. What do you want to... I understand you're a police officer?
I am a police officer, and I came in on the tail end of your conversation here. But I wanted to say that your thought of a driver that waits until there is a safe location to pull over, as a police officer, I always appreciate when people will pull onto a side street or a parking lot and get out of the main lane of traffic. Now, also, that goes along with that, as a police officer, whenever I make a traffic stop, I try to do it in an area that's safe where there's a parking lot or a side street that we can pull onto.
Wow. This is a game changer for me.
A lot of times I'll also educate people. I mean, sometimes I'll get behind a driver and I'll flip on my light, and they freak out and they stop in the middle of traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes people are going to do that. So usually what I'll do is I'll go up to the window, introduce myself, go through my spiel, grab their license and their insurance and say, would you do me a favor and pull into this parking lot or pull onto this side street? And I'll use that opportunity to educate them, you know, on what to do when you're being pulled over on a traffic stop.
Michael, what do you think of this? Mary, maybe you have a comment too, but a couple commenters, texters have said, we put on our hazards so the cop knows, and then we pull over to someplace safe. That's one way your car can communicate back.
That's right. So you're aware, you're telling the officer you're aware of what's going on and I'm going to cooperate. Just, you know, give me a second, right?
You like the sound of that, Michael?
I personally have never had that happen to me, but I'm kind of glad maybe you just educated me on something that I'm not aware of. And if somebody does that to me, you know, that'll be a little mental note for me that they at least are acknowledging my presence. But, I mean, I work in a suburban town. We're relatively small. And, I mean, the areas where I make traffic stops, I try to do it in where there's parking lots and side streets for me to pull off to so I can be safe.
Good for you. Hey, Michael, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, appreciate that. And who's the next call? Sarah on line 3 with Mary Wisniewski from the Tribune on the line. That's line 3. Here, let's try it again. That would be line... Sarah, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I live in Joliet. And about 15 years ago in my 20s, I was pulled over for speeding on Jefferson Street. And it's a really busy street. I pulled over into the McDonald's parking lot, which was maybe 5 feet in front of me. And the police officer totally screamed at me. And he's like, why did you do that? You're supposed to pull over as soon as I turn my lights on right where you're at. I was like, well, I didn't know that. Sorry. And then he proceeded to give me a speeding ticket. And, you know, I haven't heard anything other than that since I had the encounter. So now every time I'm pulled over, I'm hesitant to pull over anywhere but where I'm at.
Yeah, right. And the police officer now is stopped in that right lane. You're going northbound on Jefferson. You're past Larkin. Are you just before the McDonald's on the left side over there?
I was going westbound on Jefferson, so I was on the right side of the street there, so I just pulled right into the McDonald's.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. This is the yin and yang of it, I guess. Thanks for the call, Sarah. But I think maybe I'm overstating the case, Mary Wisniewski, but it just seems to me like I see that way too often. Everybody's in jeopardy because the officer pulls the person over. Or for that matter, the person stops too soon.
This person stops too soon, exactly. I think that there can be a little bit of thoughtfulness on both sides. I was really happy to hear the police officer who was on before us, you know, make the case for trying to pull over somewhere safe.
Many pages of text about this. We're out of time, but we'll maybe come back to this subject someday. And about the distracted driving piece, it's in the Chicago Tribune. Mary Wisniewski, the transportation writer who's also a fan of Algren A Life. Give me your elevator speech on your book, Mary.
Okay, this is a biography of Nelson Algren, who's probably Chicago's best-known writer after Carl Sandburg, and it talks about how he covered Chicago neighborhoods and how he's remembered as being a champion of the underclass.
You've heard of the title City on the Make, John, right?
Sure.
That's the one.
That's the one. What? That's his famous.
That's one of his famous books, and it's a book that I recommend for anyone who lives in Chicago. You should everyone should have a copy of Chicago City on the Make. You should get it with your first water bill when you move into the area.
Police officers should hand it out when they pull you over in traffic. It's just
like, I think, but don't read it now, right? Read it later when you get home.
Algren alive, yeah. And what would be the takeaway in the 20th century now? How does he translate?
I think he translates really well because he predicted how the crust of our civilization can be very thin sometimes, and how sometimes people just can't get up the ladder to success at all, that they fall off the ladder and they're in the realms of the hopeless. And he understood that sometimes the American way just doesn't work out for some people, and I think that makes him a really important American writer.
And a Chicagoan.
Mary
Wisniewski's book is Algren, A Life. Okay, it's next on my nightstand. Thank you, Mary.
Okay, thank you, John.
Nice to hear your voice. I appreciate your help. By the way, Steve, how do you hear this? So we were talking about what happens when you get pulled over, how to make it safer for the drivers and for the police officers. And this texter says, always film the police. They're a little nicer with a camera in their face.
I think that's a little sarcastic, a little defensive.
Or passive aggressive. That is, maybe it works. You know, the cop's not going to like it now, but he is going to not
give you a warning ticket.
Justin Kaufman just strolled into our studio, by the way. Hi, Justin.
Hi. So, how are you?
But I mean, I just wonder, like, okay, the cop's not going to like this. He's not going to be happier, but maybe he is going to be more by the book. You know, maybe he won't abuse you in any way. But at the end of the day, anytime you get pulled over, you're trying to not get a ticket.
Yeah.
If he sees you with the phone in your hand, videoing, you're going to get a ticket. Don't you think that increases the likelihood?
I guess the question is, do you get the extra added? If you feel this way, I don't know who, you know, there are certain people in society who feel this way, that the cops are out to get them, that they feel like a ticket is better than something worse.
Ticket is better than something worse. Right, so you, right.
That's what the idea that you're putting that on. Yeah. I'll take the ticket so I don't, you know.
But you're not going to hit me with a stick or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Hey, listen, so Justin Kaufman this evening with Andrea Darlis, you just heard Steve Bertrand mention, is doing our election coverage from the Billy Goat.
How great,
the one downstairs, I presume.
The one now across the river, buddy. Like, we're no longer...
Oh, my God, that's right. I just looked out the window going, I would be downstairs at a Subway sandwich shop going, where's the Billy Goat?
Bedway.
We're not at the Tribune Tower
anymore. We were at the Tribune Tower, yes, underneath Michigan Avenue, the famed Billy Goat Tavern will be the place tonight for our election coverage. We're doing a standard election results show, but we wanted to... It's Chicago. It's the Chicago election. We wanted to suss it up a little bit, and I feel pretty good about it. We've got a great show lined up, people coming through.
Giannis is going to be there. Will they give you commentary, owners?
They'll give us commentary. They've got a brand new party room. They did some renovations down there, so we're kind of...
Have you tried their beer?
I have, yeah. Billy Goat Light or Dark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it do they have an IPA?
I'm not sure if they
do. I hope they don't. I mean,
I have only been given the option. Now, again, I have not been in the Goat for a couple of months, but the only options I ever got was Light or Dark.
Okay.
And that's what I would live by. Nothing else on the menu.
When they came out with their own branded beer, which seems like a good idea, there was something I didn't like about it because I thought it was sort of in conflict with who they are. You know, they're a sort of nuts and bolts, blue-collar journalist bar in Chicago. If they have some fancy IPA like the micro brews on the north side, well then that's not their identity.
I've never actually asked what kind of beer it is. I get Light or Dark.
Yeah.
And that gives you an idea of what kind of beer it is.
That's all you need. We got both flavors.
Yeah, that's
what
it.
Do you want the light one or the dark one?
There's no menu. The guy comes over and he tells you light or dark, and you're like, I guess dark. Light,
you know what they should do too for your coverage tonight is allow smoking.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I'm like, you know, this is almost perfect for a gritty Chicago election. If they would just for one night, if all of Chicago would let you smoke in bars just for one night to celebrate elections like a holiday, then
a smoky
we could do that.
Holiday.
Right, a smoky holiday, an election, municipal runoff, only a runoff. Can't be the general. It's got to be a runoff.
Well, you know, if I get to be king,
you're in.
You could smoke in bars.
All right, good.
That is, I've never understood, I guess I do, but I could make the argument that if you wanted to operate a smoking-friendly facility, you should be able to do so.
Well, our neighboring states still have that ability. If you're in Indiana, there are smoking restaurants.
Really? Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And there are some that, I don't know if they're grandfathered in. I'm not going to name the names, but there's some here that are just doing it. They just do it. Like they're.
I walked into one not that long ago, and I was shocked. I go, oh, my God. It was almost as if, you know, Martians were landing or something. People are smoking. Oh! And I thought, do I have a civic duty to call the police? What's happening here?
You should have done it. You should have called the cops on the smoking bar.
Quick now. So what is the big topic tonight?
So who's tonight, gonna win the mayor? Yeah, who's going to be in the mayor? There's 15 runoff races for aldermen. There's a treasurer's race as well. And that's pretty much it. There's some suburban races as well. People aren't paying attention that there are some for townships and boards and things like that. But for this, it's the mayor's race, which a lot of people say might be called early, just for the fact that the polls are looking like one candidate's above the other. But at the same time, I will say that, you know, that we have been in a part of the election cycles in the last, I don't know, five now. We have polls have been absolutely wrong.
Yeah, well,
including the general election here when Preckwinkle and Lightfoot won in the runoff. But the but for us, it's going to be, I've got all of the, you know, Eric Zorn's going to be out there and all sorts of great guests as well as aldermen and alderman elect.
Is Rick Hogan coming out?
We hope so. We just hope he's there. Rick, he just has to be
or
there.
Or at least somewhere he's smoking. At least he'll smoke somewhere.
Some of the mayoral candidates who lost in the general will be there. So we got a good show. Amara Enya, Paul Vallis.
Oh, no kidding, really?
Alderman elect.
I'd love to hear their thoughts on
Maria Haddon from the 49th Ward, good who beat Joe Moore, will be there.
Oh, yeah.
Gilbert Villegas, who's the Latino caucus chair, will be there. So there's a lot of great, if you want, I mean, it's open to the public. It's going to be a party. So come on down. But this is where we really want this to sort of be the center of tonight's activity when it comes to this election.
That's the Billy Goat Tavern downtown Chicago on Lower Michigan Avenue, right across from the Tribune Tower. But down there.
Starts at 7.
Andrea Darlis, Justin Kaufman, yep. Good deal, man.
Thanks, buddy.
It's 2:43. There's a guy in Chicago who was on one of those cooking shows, Top Chef. But now he's on a cooking show where they cook food with pot in it. Bon Appetit. I'm not making this up. I was reading in the Chicago Sun Crimes the other day, and they had a pretty funny story, and I read past one of the lines in there. I thought it was Bon Appetit, but the name of the show is Bon Appetit. Three contestants will compete in a cooking competition that I believe includes marijuana infused into the food. This is where we're going, folks. And one of them is that Dale Taldy, who was on Top Chef and did pretty well. And now he's one of, in the debut of this show on Viceland tonight, one of the three contestants. And he's on line one. Hey, Dale, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. How's it going? How are you?
Really good. Welcome to the show and congratulations, I guess. I don't know how you're going to do tonight, but you're on the debut episode of this Bon Appetit show, huh?
Yeah. It's a fun show. It's tying in some things that I love to do and partake in and have fun with. So it seemed like a natural fit.
That's right. As a young man, maybe as an adult now, you're still young anyway, you have been a pot smoker, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when you're, you know, in your teenage years and you're in high school and early college, you party and, you know, I smoked weed, but, you know, I'm 40 now. I got a kid. For me, if I'm partaking in cannabis, it's, a lot of it is to, you know, it's a method of pain, to deal with some pain. Being on the line cooking and being in restaurants for 20 some odd years, you know, at some point I used to play basketball and thought I could play basketball. So I've got terrible ankles, bad knees, a terrible back. So. Yeah. You know, for me to use CBD and cannabis as pain relief instead of, you know, constantly taking, you know, Tylenol or Advil or any of those things, I just think it's more natural.
Well, in Chicago, it's going to be legal, too. I mean, the CPBs are already legal, but using marijuana medicinally or recreationally is going to be above the law. In the very near future, at least that's my expectation. But then you, how, is it like those other cooking shows where they say, okay, here's the ingredients you've got to do, and it will always include marijuana, or what? How does the competition work?
Yep. Exactly. I mean, you nailed it. I mean, there's an expert on marijuana, CBD, and cannabis there who, she owns a dispensary, so a lot of the products we were using were directly from her dispensary. And she kind of tells us how to do it. A lot of us, and including myself, professional chef, but, you know, when it comes to cooking with cannabis, it really, you know, came down to cooking weed brownies with my friends as a teenager.
Right.
And now it was, this is at a really high level. It was like being able to use fresh cannabis leaves, being able to use a lot of these infused honeys and a lot of these tinctures and all these different products that were are available in the market now were eye-opening. Sometimes you just didn't get it. Like, she would try and tell us how many milligrams to use, and I was like, well, I'm just tasting this. I'm not eating it, so I'm just going to use all of it.
Do they judge you on the flavor of the foods or on the buzz that the foods generate?
It was definitely about the food, of the flavor and the taste of the food. But, you know, it's like when you're drinking wine and you've gotten to that threshold of drinking too much really great wine.
Yeah.
At some point, you can't taste it anymore. And I think we as the chefs had to be conscious about that with our guests. You know, you can't overserve them. And I think it was a moot point because they just kept on smoking the entire time. And but, you know, it was up to us to make delicious food that had either CBD and or THC compounds in it.
Right. CBD is the component in marijuana that doesn't get you high, but calms you, if you will. And then the other one that we're more familiar with is the one that people know, that's the stimulant and or the whatever you call it in marijuana. Yeah. So like, what kind of food did you prepare then on this show?
You know, it was amazing because they had a really great, I think everything was about high, right? So high-end ingredients. So if you can imagine, they had very, you know, our first challenge was using very high-end ingredients. And then the second round was a choice of, you know, three different very unusual products, food products. And then the third one was, and I don't want to give out too much because we'd love for you guys to watch the show tonight because it's a fun show. It's about making a dessert that gets high and not just about like smoking weed and get high, but it gets high. So I'm sure you can lean into that and figure that out a little bit. But they were very clever with the products and more importantly, the challenges. And it was, all three contestants that were there were from Top Chef. And we were all friends. So for me, it was like, go out to L.A.
Yeah, right.
Spend a couple of days with some friends, cook and hang out. And if you can imagine, because it's a weed show, it's a pretty chill show. You know, it doesn't have the high-stakes drama of Top Chef. And it's not so... Yeah, no, it was really fun.
Well, what do you think about this, Dale? Where are you, the head chef at a restaurant? Do you have your own place now? What's happening with you and your career?
Yeah, so I am running my own hospitality group called Food Crush Hospitality, and I'm about to open a restaurant in Tarrytown, New York, which is the start of the Hudson Valley in upstate New York. Not a lot of details we're putting out there, but it's definitely going to be an Asian restaurant, and I have a couple other projects. We're also writing a screenplay for a movie. If you could imagine, being part of the cannabis culture helps me with my creativity and has helped me with coming together with this screenplay.
Dale Taldy's sure. On the line. You probably saw him on Top Chef, and you'll see him tonight on Viceland's premiere episode of Bong Appetit Cook-Off.